Welcome to the Kickstarter Journeys podcast brought to you by Fundamental Games. Each episode will provide you with some insight and opinions about successfully funded Kickstarter projects from the creators themselves. Here's your host, Wes Woodbury, ready to learn about another successful journey from the popular crowdfunding platform. Enjoy!
Hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kickstarter Journeys. Today I have Cameron Ert. Wait a second, there's no vowels there. Cameron Ert of VGB Publishing. He has a crowdfunding game right now called Vowel. How are you doing today, Cameron?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good, good. I like that game style that you have there. I've played all kinds of games that have to do with words, like Scrabble or Boggle or just crosswords and puzzles like that. And Vowel takes a different approach. You cut the vowels right out of there, which is really cool. So we'll talk about your game a bit. But I'm curious, what brings you to the board game world and to Kickstarter? How'd you figure that out?
So that's a good question. For the last 3 or 4 years, I've been pretty entrenched in designing games on the side. I've been playing games a little longer than that. But I've always enjoyed designing games for friends, family, just on the side, more as a hobby than out of anything that I thought would bring. I never expected to really publish any games or take them beyond just my own living room or local game nights or anything like that. But I had a lot of people with Val in particular saying that they really wanted their own copy of the game. And I kind of just dove into the rabbit hole of figuring out how do I make that happen. I've always been kind of an entrepreneurial person. So I think it wasn't ever really a question to me whether or not I would self-publish versus try to pitch the game. Or get somebody else to publish it. So, and self-publishing, it became pretty evidently clear that for a first-time creator, Kickstarter was definitely the way to go.
Yeah, I discovered it kind of by surprise when I was just trying to look at the avenues. I wanted to make a game, and I was like, how is this even possible? And one of the first things you come across is crowdfunding.
Is Kickstarter, which
I'd honestly never heard of it before, but I know many people live and breathe this world, which is pretty cool. How long have you been developing this game then? You've developed other games, but when did Vowel kind of begin? A notebook sketch or something?
Vowel started, I think, around 2016. Wow. Was just the base idea for it. It originally started out looking at license plates. It was kind of just a game my then girlfriend, she's my wife now, we played together looking at license plates and trying to see if we could come up with words. Because it seemed like a lot of license plates don't have vowels, just mostly consonants. So it started out as that. And then pretty quickly, I thought, you know, maybe there's something to this. And I kind of just got out of control and started writing a billion cards that were words without vowels. And it just went from there. So it's 2016. So, yeah, 4.5 years since that original idea.
Just kind of dabbling with it on the side and then finally decided to go into full gear with it and hit that Kickstarter. Now, you did launch this Kickstarter a little while ago, maybe had a speed bump or two and came across as a relaunch. So we'll just focus on the new game or the new launch, which you're funded now. Congratulations, over $8,000. That's awesome to see. What did you use to establish your new funding goal and your new game price? Like, what kind of barriers did you have to figure out to make that happen?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing that I had to do was really work over what went wrong on the original launch. And I should preface this, I guess, by saying that the original launch didn't necessarily fail. I chose to cancel it about halfway through. I think it's possible we may have reached our funding goal if I had let it get all the way through, but I just wasn't really happy with how it was going. And there were a lot of mistakes that I think I made. So a big part of this relaunch campaign was figuring out what those mistakes were in order to, you know, fix those mistakes and have a much better relaunch go around. So yeah, like you mentioned, figuring out backer tiers, that was one thing that I really had to kind of nail down. Thankfully, I'm an accounting major, so I do have some experience in, you know, product pricing and things like that. I have taken a lot of business classes and things like that. So the prices this time around, we went with much lower. I think a big mistake I made last time was going into it with the mindset of making money, as opposed to going into the mindset of, I just want this game to be made. My goal should be to break even, not to turn a profit. And if we turn a profit because we go beyond breaking even, then that's just bonus on the side. But so I think that was a big thing going into this relaunch that I had to figure out. And I think I did a good job at reworking sort of the monetary side of things and lowering our funding goals and lowering our tier levels and all that.
Yeah. And the page itself and the images look really clean and crisp. I know you've used an artist that I've worked with before, Tristan Rawson, and the colors and the style come across really, really well. How did you discover him, and what made you decide that person as an artist?
Yeah, so I discovered him through Facebook groups. I'm in a lot of different random board gaming groups on Facebook, and Tristan is a pretty active contributor to a lot of the art ones and graphic design ones and things like that, and just game design ones in general. He's designed a couple of his own, I know. So I came across his style, and it just really clicked right away that it felt like it would be the right style for Vowel, because the game is very, it's very graphic design oriented. You know, it's a word game. There's not a lot of imagery or anything like that. Yeah. So I wanted something that I wanted to go with somebody that I knew could make graphic design still feel artistic, and still look attractive, even though it's mostly just letters. While also still keeping it simple, because it is just a simple little word game that I wanted to feel accessible. And I feel like Tristan's style really, really fit with that. And he was really happy to just take it and go with it. I'm really happy with the direction he took it. And I think it turned out really, really nice.
Yeah, he has this knack for kind of figuring out what your game is about and just really creating a theme that surprises even you. Like when we were doing Die in the Dungeon, and when I saw him building games about snowballs for other people, or a game about businesses for someone else, you just see he figures out that theme and just makes it really appear in every single card and image and icon that he makes. So it's great that you're able to find him and work with him. And if anybody ever does need some art that you want kind of a vectorish image look to, I certainly recommend him.
It's really highly recommend.
All right, and then you've got some people that did some videos and presentations about your game, and I know that can be a struggle for a new creator to figure out. You know, there's hundreds of creators out there. Do I go with one that I spend $1,000 with, or do I just go with free? How did you establish if you should spend money and where you should spend that money?
It was pretty tricky. Like I said, there's a lot of content creators out there that create a lot of really good content. And they have just widely varying audience sizes and whether or not they offer things for free or they're paid. It took a long time for me to figure out. For starters, it was, okay, how many copies of this game am I willing to create? Because I used print and play games to create my preview copies, which is a cost to me. It's definitely an upfront cost to me. So it was figuring out how many copies do I have that I want to spare, that I can pay for. And then, you know, as a first-time creator, I really felt like audience size and exposure was potentially the most important thing to me. I am a big fan of a lot of smaller content creators that create a lot of great content. But for what my needs were and for my limited budget, it felt very much like I needed to go with people that had as big of an audience as I could manage.
So you kind of need somebody that has 1,000 or 2,000 views per video instead of 50 or 100, even though the 50 or 100 people have good content.
It
doesn't help all the time.
I had a very big long list of different content creators that I really would love to be able to send review copies to, that I had to whittle down to. I think we ended up with like 7 or 8, maybe 9 different creators that eventually ended up getting copies and did some stuff. I think that number's about right. I did, though, because the upfront cost for creating those print and play copies was there. I did try to steer clear of or kind of toe the line between people with larger audiences that still provided content for free, just in exchange for the game, as opposed to paying for that content. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I do enjoy supporting content creators in that way, but for the budget I had, it was just something I had to consider. So there were one or two people that I did pay for the content in addition to giving them a game. But I focused more on trying to find that in-between of large-ish in size, but not so huge that I had to pay an exorbitant amount of money for them to even look at my game.
Yeah, and you got a couple of good names in there. I mean, you got Ido's Val review he did. You've got Monique and Naven who did Before You Play. I know I've tried to get them to play one of my games, but their queue is too big, and one of my games, they didn't like the theme. Sometimes the creators themselves just say, hey, it's not my style of game. So it's cool.
I got a little lucky with them, actually. I kind of caught them while they were still a little early in starting out. They had grown a relatively good size audience, but they were still kind of just getting started. So they didn't have necessarily a huge backlog of people in front of me that I had to, you know, wait for to get my game in or whatever. Now they've just kind of grown exponentially quick ever since then. But so I think timing, I got a little bit lucky with them, but I'm very happy with that I was able to get my game into their hands.
Excellent. One of the things I did want to ask you about when we're talking about cost and trying to budget everything is your shipping fees. And shipping for me has been a struggle. I had some mistakes with one of my games, and then Brexit happened right after another one of my games. So a little bit frustrating for overseas, but you actually have an interesting part of your game where you've given United States shipping costs absolutely free. And I see that kind of lower on the page, but I don't see it at the top of the page. What was it that made you decide that you could do free game shipping in the States, and how do you kind of advertise and get more awareness of that to your customers or to your backers?
Yeah, shipping is definitely tricky. And I'm still definitely kind of learning as I go. I think it was important to me to think about how Kickstarter backers view shipping, and how they view that added cost in comparison to the cost of the game. So realistically, like, the shipping to the US for my game costs more like $6 to $8. It kind of depends on, you know, what stretch goals we hit and how heavy the game ends up being. But I knew that the base cost of the game was not going to be big enough for it to feel justified to pay that much for shipping. So people really prefer to pay $24 with free shipping rather than $19 with $5-$6 of shipping. Because that shipping being a third of or a half of the cost of the game itself just feels excessive. And it doesn't feel as fair. Even though it's pretty justified for this game because it is fairly heavy with the amount of cards that are in it. Even though we've kept the box as small as we could get it, while still fitting everything, obviously, it is heavy with that amount of cards. So I toyed around with a couple other different ideas of just like doing $2 shipping or $3 shipping and kind of adjusting the pledge to reflect that. But in the end, I just decided everybody likes free shipping. So I just kind of bundled it all into the core price of the game. Which even with shipping bundled in is still very, very steeply discounted from what it would be if we ever take it to retail. And I think that has really helped this time around. Last time around, I did do, I think, some extra shipping cost, and I think that turns people away from it a little bit.
Yeah. No, I think it's cool that you're able to work that out. And I would say if you want to, you probably want to throw that near the top of your page. I think that's something you might get some more interest with. Now, you had something neat in your game, and I know we talked about the game design just a little bit before, but one of the things that most of the reviewers talked about during your game was the scoring mechanism. Maybe tell me a little bit about how you came up with that mechanism, because I don't think I've seen that one in another game where you can kind of work both your score plus your score goal kind of at the same time. How did you figure that out?
I will try not to gush too much about it, because it is one of my more proud moments of game design with this one. So I try not to gush too much about it because I don't want to, you know, overinflate it. People will have varying opinions and might hate my scoring system, but I think it's great. I really am into... I've always really enjoyed games that have unique scoring mechanics, or just unique. Like, I really like games where, like, it's the first person to get this many points wins unless they've spent the most money. You know, I love little twists on scoring like that that make a game feel a little bit different and a little bit stand out. And I knew going into developing Valo that I wanted it to have a bit more than just the word game element of it, to appeal a bit more to more regular gamers that enjoy something with a little more depth and strategy. So while the meat of the gameplay is quick wordplay, you're literally quick racing against a timer or an opponent, the scoring system offers you some different decisions in terms of how you want to proceed. It is a little hard to explain without you being able to see it. But yeah. Basically, you have a scoring token that's tracking how many points you have, and you have a victory token, which is tracking how many points you need to get to win. And your goal is to get the two of them to meet. So when you succeed, you'll get to choose if you want to take 2 points and move your victory token up, or take 1 point and lower your victory token and another player's victory token down by one. And that's important because the track is tiered in such a way that wherever your scoring token is, you'll be drawing more difficult cards. So I might take 2 points, and next turn I'll have to draw 2 extra red cards, which are the most difficult cards. Or I could take 1 point and lower my victory token and someone else's victory token and only draw 2 yellow cards, or a yellow and a red, or what have you. So it was just a little something that I wanted to give people a nice little moment of a choice in the game, because, you know, quick wordplay is not a strategy game, which is fine. But I liked having a little extra something. And the bright side of it too is it functions really nicely as kind of this catch-up mechanic of, if you do opt to only take 1 point and you lower your victory token, you also have to lower somebody else's victory token. And most of the time, people will lower the token of whoever's not doing as well. So it does function as a nice little catch-up mechanic too. In terms of if somebody's just really struggling, it's not their day, it can help them out a bit.
Yeah, it's a great mechanic. I love how the GIF shows it on the story page itself. It really stands out, and that's something I'll probably end up sharing on one of the many groups I'm in too. I'll just share that GIF if I can figure out a way to save it.
If people are listening, go to the page, look at the GIF. It's really difficult to explain without being able to physically see it. That's been something I've actually struggled with, trying to figure out how to like concisely explain how it works.
Just with words, yeah.
Yeah, without being able to see how it works.
Cool. And then the other thing you had on the go is you were working on a solo mode. I don't know if you have you got that finished up yet, or are you still working on that one?
The solo mode is 95% done. There's a couple little more tweaks that I'm making to it just to make sure, because it does include some levels of difficulty. You can adjust your difficulty to suit, you know, whatever you want. You could make a really, really hard game or a really, really easy game. It's got a little more tweaking to do to make sure that the really, really hard version is not impossible.
not Robinson Crusoe hard.
Yeah. So it's 95% done. It's very nearly there.
And kind of what was your perspective on having it as a stretch goal versus being included in the game itself? Are there extra cards or components that you'd have to do to make solo mode work? Or?
Yeah, so how I ended up designing the solo mode, which initially it wasn't even something I ever considered doing, because the game is very much a, you know, more on the party side of games. Party games tend to not translate well to lower player counts. But after I designed a small, it has a the game has a small variant if you're playing with two players, which I really enjoyed making because I think it actually is a fun little variant to play with two players. As the pandemic hit, I got into solo gaming a lot more, just because accessibility wise, it's a lot easier to sit down and play a game with myself than to try and find somebody to play with.
Yeah.
So it was something I considered, and I thought I might as well give it a go. And it ended up working out pretty well. But because the game is more geared as a party game, it didn't necessarily feel like something that needed to be included from the get-go. And it does involve extra cards that you have to play with that control this automated opponent that you're playing against.
Yeah.
It does include extra components that you need to play it. So that was another reason that I kind of opted to keep it out. It didn't feel like something that was really necessary to include in the game. Because I don't even know if there will be anybody that wants to play Val solo. It didn't feel like something I really needed to include. But if we get to a point where I can afford to include the extra cards, then I'd love to do it.
Yeah. Cool. Now, and some creators, and myself included, often include a print and play version of the game. I noticed yours doesn't, but yours also has like 400 cards, so it could be kind of hard to print and play. Has anybody asked you or approached you about a print and play option, or is it something you
I've
considered?
Had a couple people. It hasn't been very many, and I've considered it. But yeah, in the end, like you said, it does have upwards of, right now we're at 380 cards. Yeah. We're approaching our first stretch goal, which brings that to 420, which is a lot of cards. And that would be a lot to print at home and cut at home. And I toyed around with including like two words per card to cut that in half. And it just doesn't really work very well. So it ended up not being something I included. If more people keep bugging me about it, then maybe I'll put one together for the backers. But just the amount of paper you would need to use in order to print it out, I just felt like it wasn't worth it.
And
the amount of effort it would be to cut all the cards out.
If it was a pure kind of strategy solo game, maybe. But when it's designed more as a party game, probably better to just buy the game itself.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, you have a different tier as well. You have something called the Investor Tier, and this says that you get two copies of Val plus a copy of every future game, expansion, and promotion released by your publishing company, both on and off Kickstarter. This offer is only available to U.S. backers and includes all shipping costs. So that's a pretty impressive tier there, depending on how many years you plan to be in business and how many games you plan to produce each year. Have you seen this tier in other Kickstarters, or what made you decide this?
I personally haven't seen it in any other Kickstarters, but I'm a pretty avid reader of Jamie Stegmaier's blog on Kickstarter, and he had a post, I don't even know how long ago it was. I stumbled onto it by accident. I don't even think it came out when I read it, where he mentioned a couple that he had seen this sort of everything forever tier in. And the idea of, as a first-time creator, it makes a lot of sense, because in theory, in the long run, if I do continue making and publishing games, which I hope that I do, in the long run, it's a definite loss. Like, I will be losing money in the long run, but the amount of money you get up front is almost worth that, because if I can't get my first game off the ground, more games probably aren't going to come. You know, it's so the upfront investment, I think, is worth the long-term loss, assuming we can make it long-term. And it gives backers a way to really support a company extra if they're really, really excited about what they're doing or what they're planning. And it is a risk because, you know, I could get hit by a bus next month. We have no idea. I might not make another game ever again. Which I hopefully is not the case, but it is a risk that they're taking on, and I appreciate people who are willing to take on that risk, and I'm surprised that so many people have been willing to. But yeah, it was just something I stumbled upon and thought that is a really clever, unique idea. And every once in a while, I stumble upon smaller first-time creator and think, if they had this option, I would definitely consider it, because I love what they're doing, and I am definitely going to check out everything else they keep doing.
Yeah, and the good thing about when if you're somebody that's listening is planning to make a Kickstarter, you actually have control over how many people can back any pledge you make. Mm-hmm.
So it was limited.
Yeah, so you can put a cap on it and say, you know what, I don't want to do this for more than 5 people or more than 10 people. And you have yours at 10 right now. You can always add more later on if you felt that more people were interested, mm-hmm. or you wanted to be more generous with that. But the cool thing is, you know, 10 people pledge $250, so a quarter of your funding or so.
It was a big upfront boost that really, really helped us get funded quickly. I think it was really, really helpful. And for people who don't already know, getting funded as quick as you can on Kickstarter is always good. It's not a straight line to get funded. If you get funded, you're much more likely to keep getting backers over the course of the campaign. It was definitely very helpful. It was a very helpful boost from the get-go.
Right on. Now, another part of Kickstarter that many people talk about is trying to build a crowd, not only a crowd that's going to back you, but just kind of awareness of who you are in the game hobby, because gamers tend to support gamers that they've seen or know or posted. So you run a little website, or you're part of a website called the Board Game Bulletin, and you've published online magazine articles, you've got news articles, you often comment on posts and whatnot on Instagram and Facebook. So maybe tell me a little bit about how the Board Game Bulletin, bit of a tongue twister, started, and what you contribute to that on a regular basis.
So the Board Game Bulletin was my attempt to get more involved in the hobby and talk about games in a way that I felt was a little more accessible to talk about games. That was the goal, at least. I have always felt like there are a lot of fantastic content creators that make a lot of great content and cover things like we cover in the magazine, like news and interviews and stuff like that. But I have had a hard time getting into some of them because of the overwhelming amount of content that they put out. I love the Dice Tower. Pretty much anything I watch or read on the Dice Tower, I enjoy, but they come out with a ridiculous amount of content constantly. And I have a hard time keeping up with it, and I wish I could, but I just can't. And likewise, Board Game Geek. As somebody who was new to the hobby getting into it, Board Game Geek was very, very overwhelming. There's so much going on, and I'm glad that they've been working on it, but I still feel like it's not the most user-friendly site out there. It's not the most intuitive thing to get into. So I really felt like there was a space for something, which I ended up making a magazine, to kind of fill that gap in terms of, you know, we cover gaming news and we create fun content like interviews and posts and all that sort of stuff, fun video content that we've been creating lately. But in a more accessible format that doesn't feel as overwhelming. We've been releasing an issue every single month, and it's not a huge amount of content. It's just a fair amount of content. It would take you a while to get through and whatnot if you wanted to, but it's not what feels like an endless amount of content that you get in some other places. That was kind of the goal behind it. And my own personal reason for doing it was I wanted to get more involved in the hobby, and I love chatting with people about games. So I wanted to, you know, kind of find my own way to share my thoughts on games so I can have more conversations with people, because I just love talking about games.
Yeah, it's a clean website. You don't get over inundated with articles. You can filter through in the different months. For the month of March, you had a designer interview with Emerson. You had a creator spotlight. You had your own game kind of mentioned. because obviously you're leading up to your own Kickstarter.
It was coming up, yeah.
Yeah, and then Mr. Joe Slack of Crazy in a Box Games, he made a cool game also with the artist Tristram Rossen of Relics of Rajavahir. I can't even pronounce
however
it.
However you say it.
It is coming, though. It's coming soon, and it looks really good in the pictures, but it's just neat that you're able to just pick some different things that you think are important as a independent gamer and designer and have some fun with that while giving back to the community. I think that's important, so well done.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now, do you have other games that you have kind of in the works? Was Vowel your one project that you just wanted to make sure happened before anything else? Or have you had other games that you kind of fiddled with over the past few years or months?
Yeah, I think, like a lot of game designers, I have a lot going on. As of right now, I would say that I've got maybe three, maybe four. I'll say three, maybe four games that are in more serious states of development that I feel like have the potential to at least be something I might try and publish. And then there's, as most game designers would probably tell you, you know, upwards of a dozen other random ideas floating around in my head and on paper all the time. So I've got a lot of things that I'm working on, but only a few that are really in a state that feels serious enough that they might be something I try and publish. Right now, I'm hoping I have one in particular that I'm pretty excited about that's getting a bit closer to starting blind playtesting soon. So I'm hoping that one may come to Kickstarter early next year, first quarter next year is the hope. But we'll see. It's a
without conventions and gatherings, is it something you would playtest on Tabletop Simulator or send out copies for?
Probably mostly Tabletop Simulator. If people are willing to do print and play copies, then potentially that. So we'll just see in terms of what I can find for people who want to playtest. But it'll probably end up going mostly digital. Conventions have been, not having conventions has been a hard thing. For game design and development and things like that. It was a hard thing with Vowel as I was getting closer to the campaign, wanting to take it to conventions and share it with people and get more awareness around it. And then everything just kind of came to a grinding halt and
right. It
is definitely tricky. It'll probably mostly be digital, maybe some print and play if people are up for it.
Very cool. Well, maybe if you have any last words of wisdom, what's the one thing that you think you learned the most from the first time you launched that you fixed the second time? And what have you learned since then for Kickstarter? Ooh,
that is an excellent question. Maybe one thing overall is just to not, if it's your first time Kickstarter, no matter how much you can read about Kickstarter or follow other Kickstarters or try and learn from others, you can't expect to go into it fully prepared. It's not ever going to happen, especially on your first time, first go around. You are going to make lots of mistakes. And that's just kind of how it goes. I did a lot of researching and reading up on what it takes to run a Kickstarter campaign. And my first campaign launched, and it was just, there were so many things that I was never anticipating. And so many mistakes I made that I just wouldn't have even thought about until they happened. So I think it's important to recognize that you are going to run into stuff during the campaign that you did not plan for, and you're not going to ever be fully prepared for a campaign. I think two of the bigger things that I ran into was efficiently running stretch goals. I think backers really care about what your stretch goals are. They don't want it to feel like you took stuff out of the game and made them stretch goals. The stretch goals should feel like bonus extra stuff that isn't necessarily necessary, but it's fun to have. At least that's kind of a general statement. Not all backers will feel that way. But I think it's important, to not exclude content and make it a stretch goal, but rather have stretch goals that, again, like I said, feel more like just bonus extras that you don't really need for the game, but they're nice to have.
If you can improve the quality or add a card that you don't necessarily need or something like that.
Yeah. So I think that was one big thing that I just wasn't prepared for. and ran into issues with last time. Yeah, I think it's just recognizing that you are not going to be prepared, at least not fully prepared, especially first time around, until you just do it. You kind of just have to do it and go through the experience of doing it to figure out how it all works.
Yep, start to finish. And there's even more things that you, and you haven't been to that point yet, but once you have funded and you get the Kickstarter funds and then you try to manufacture, there's all kinds of other painful experiences that you may go for. So,
which I just, I know that I'm not prepared for, but at least I'm expecting to not be prepared.
There you go. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Cameron. I think your game vowel has a very neat presence to it. That those special words, those cute owl characters by Tristram, that funky scoreboard that's double-sided where you have to make your points meet your tracker. If people are trying to envision that, it's a really neat scoring concept. And all those things work together to help you get funded. And now you've got a couple more weeks to go for your campaign. And hopefully you get some more funds built up, get you over that $10,000 mark, and make the game come to life.
It actually is it's a funding goal right now, actually.
Yeah, over the funding goal. See if you can break 10,000.
Hitting some stretch goals and things like that, yeah.
That's right. All right, well, you have a wonderful day, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.